Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have Jeremy Toman. Jeremy is the founder of Augie Studio. Jeremy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And I understand, having had a chance to chat with you before we got started, that there's a big congratulations involved and that you have a new title, Senior Vice President of AI Innovation at JWX.
That's right. We the product formerly known as Augie Studio is now part of JWX, which is a company I've actually had the pleasure of knowing at multiple points in my career when I was at CBS and Warner and other companies. So it's always fun when you've got, you know, a known player in the space that you get to get so close to, and that it's such a great fit for what our platform offered and what that company or this company does. So it's very exciting.
Well, congratulations. And a bit of serendipitous. We've had a number of founders on the podcast who've sold their company, but you may have the recognition of being the first as a guest where it's actually just taking place. So maybe that's a great starting point. If we can start with an overview of Augie and the value that you've been generating in the market, and then, you know, what the trajectory looked like leading up to today.
Absolutely. So Augie, the company was formerly AugX Labs, was founded about 4 years ago in early 2022, prior to ChatGPT and Gemini and all these other LLM-based platforms we have today. The company was founded to bring AI-based editing assistants, we always called it an assistant for video editing, to business. Basically, what we aspired to create was sort of the CapCut for business video creation. And so what Augie did was it would let you start with kind of any piece of content you had. It was sort of a transformation engine, whether you have a blog post or a long form podcast such as this, and you want to make social ready video content. Our job and our mission with Augie was to make it so that the same way my 16-year-old can position herself perfectly on TikTok, that any business, especially small to medium businesses where they might not have like a video production crew, which we know is crazy expensive and takes a long time to do anything. The idea was to make that a lot more accessible so that when companies do use video production crews, they can get even more impact out of them.
Well, I know there's definitely demand, as you point out. I think maybe before we were introduced, I absolutely can be a client, which is great. But obviously there's lots of demand because JWX recognized not only the value of the technology that you've developed, but I imagine the growth. So yeah, would love to know, you know, did you, when you founded the company, did you have an exit in mind? And if not, how did the preceding years evolve?
Sure. So this is technically, I was going up checking the math. Technically, this is the eighth company I've started. Now, a few of those were consultancies, a few of them were more like a venture funded startup. And I think for me, over my whole journey, I'm all about that journey. So sure, when you do a startup, you have exits in mind, you think about whatever it could be. But I've actually really enjoyed the process of building something out of nothing, right? I love the idea somewhere in the back of your head, you know, comes to life in a shower moment, whatever. And then you start socializing the idea and people are telling you, well, that's interesting. And people want to invest in that. And people want to work with you and co-found it with you and do all these things. So I didn't have a particular destination in mind when we started Augie. I think I always like to build a company that itself is a sustainable business and then see where it can go. For us to end up at a player, at a company like JWX, where it is such an organic fit between what we do and what they do and what their customers need, I think is like a sprinkles on top kind of situation. I'm not, you know, we had a long run of it, right? 4 years in the kind of AI era is becoming a long time. And what was interesting on our end, and I'm sure we'll dive into this, is we were always sort of looking at like who is the perfect market, right? Is it someone like you? Is it a podcaster? Is it a small business? Is it a mom and pop pizza shop, right? And what we learned is actually social media managers, editorial teams, content strategists, and sales teams, particularly around content and advertising, really had a lot of affinity for the platform. And JWX sort of brings a huge infrastructure where our, little engine that could becomes part of something bigger, and I think even more interesting into the publisher world in particular.
So what did the so you launched a company in 2022. How did the product market fit journey start to unfold?
It was a really fascinating journey. Actually, I think I have a story in here that I think is kind of interesting for a lot of folks. Let's see, we started the company in 22. We went to a private beta test in like June of 2022, and we spent all of the second half of the year really tweaking and optimizing and learning. And then in January of 2023, we opened that up to a public, sort of a velvet rope kind of waiting list style beta program. That ended up attracting about 175,000 people into it over 8 months. And from there, we ended up raising our seed round of capital, et cetera. But while we were doing that, we learned a lot about, I think, I don't know that I characterize it as a mistake, but we learned a good lesson in how to misread certain types of data, right? Because 175,000 users is a lot of people. It's enough to really build a lot of thesis around. And that pointed us squarely in product-led growth, right? Which, for those who aren't familiar with the term, it means if I get you to use my product, good odds you'll get someone else to also use my product, right? It worked very well for Slack and for Canva. And so our intent was, if you are the social media video person for brand X and you're starting to make videos using Augie, all of a sudden you're getting approvals internally, you're showing your marketing team, maybe your sales team gets interested, and we would grow from there. So during our beta program, because of the kind of wide swath of usage we had tons and tons of that, like super positive reinforcing, like people want this. What we were not paying as detailed attention to because of all of that love was how much of that was specifically around user-to-user engagement. And it turned out it actually wasn't as high as some of the numbers we were looking at thought. So we ended up basically having to really, really get focused in 2024 and 25 to get more narrowly cast at who our, who our target for our product market fit would be. And so it was an interesting sensation where we have so much data, but in fact, by looking at the data, we were actually looking at some of the wrong information. I don't know if that makes sense, but it was an interesting journey, and obviously we pivoted and recovered from it, but it was something I'd never encountered before in my career.
Interesting. So, all right. So you start to uncover that the, there's an element of the original thesis that needs reconsidering. And when you did figure out that this peer-to-peer wasn't taking place, how did you change your go-to-market approach to get to the point where you are now?
So we moved into what startups we would call founder-led sales, basically sales calls, right? And so my co-founder and myself, JT White, who I've worked with on and off for almost 15 years now, we have both have a pretty strong background in the media tech space. So we used our own network to go find publishers, mid-sized brands, agencies, et cetera, because we still saw that the usage and the value was in there. We just weren't able to grow it the way we had anticipated. So by pivoting on our kind of distribution strategy, it let us bring in a new swath of clients. We also sort of moved back into that, they call it founder beast mode kind of thing, where we were really going back to rapid iteration on product cycling so that as we would onboard new customers, whatever their demands were, whatever their needs were, we could quickly iterate on and build and learn from them. So we basically started 2024 in leaning toward enterprise sales. And in fact, with the acquisition, now the product formerly known as Augie Studio is entirely an enterprise sales driven product. So, A bit of a, I'll be honest, as a founder, a very, very difficult lesson to learn along the way. Thankfully, one we were able to leverage and move fast enough from. And again, I give a lot of credit to my co-founder at being so quick on the ball on that one. And then obviously led us down the path we ended up on.
Congrats again. You mentioned distribution. Arguably, it's a founder superpower. And we've also talked at length with other guests about founder-led sales. I know you said you used to work at some of the major networks. I imagine that puts you in this great spot, but how much of that do you attribute to your success versus just good old grinding it out?
It's a great question. I think there's a little column A, little column B. For what actually transpired with us, a lot of it had to do with the network we had already built, right? I know I don't look it, but I'm in my 50s now. And
Look great.
candidly, the positions I've held and thankfully the career I've had, I've gotten to meet a lot of people in the right positions, right? So when I was at CBS, I worked with the video team. When I was at Warner, same deal. But even prior to that, when I was at Sling, when I was helping launch startups like Sonos, always getting to be close to the right teams where we could call them up with a platform like Augie and figure out very quickly where there might be a need or not, right? As I'm sure you know, there's almost more valuable to get the no's than the yeses at times. And that quickly led us down paths of understanding basically, two key things about what people needed from Augie. And those two things were transform long form content, like again, an hour long podcast, into a clip ready for social, right? Take my CEO's keynote address at CES and get a 45 second quickie reel on LinkedIn half an hour after he's done talking, is the kind of thing you can do with Augie, right? And so that was obviously really exciting for event promoters and event marketers and really anyone around that kind of video space. The second one being transforming sort of non-video content into video content. So we had two different SKUs on this. One was called an ad maker. The other one was article to video. In both cases, so an ad maker, you could upload three pictures of a product. It could be or a website even. We'd interpret the pictures. You could add some notes, but basically, we would write a script from analyzing the images you uploaded. We'd voice that with a synthetic voice. We had a partnership with 11 Labs. And basically, you could say, here's my product. And 45 seconds later, you get your first draft video that is an ad for that product. Worked great for anything from, Shopify sellers, Etsy sellers, et cetera. The secondary version of that was article to video, similar concept, paste a URL. Let's say you wrote an article on five tips to maximize startup growth potential, right? And you want a quick explainer video to go with that. Augie could take the body of copy of your article, whatever assets you had identified with it. So if you put in some graphs or some stock clips or whatever you might have, and again, spit out an explainer video fairly quickly based on whatever that was. And so those sort of transformational aspects of content creation is where we learned that we had the biggest opportunity to go down. So when we were selling into our network, we sort of knew what to come at them with, and very quickly, again, either be like, yep, interesting, go talk to XYZ, or nope, this is not for us, move along. So most of the grinding it out part for us, I think, was grinding through our networks as opposed to trying to figure out who's the person to contact at so and so. I think that's the benefit of the gray hairs, is you already know who to call, right?
Yeah, no, it makes good sense. And one of the topics I find myself in a conversation with talking with entrepreneurs is, hey, do I just get right at it, or do I spend time, in someone else's organization nurturing my network? I think the answer is depends on a case by case basis. But
I
at least
agree.
in this case, it sounds like there's tremendous value in having been in the trenches leading up to Augie.
Well, you said it earlier, like on the value of distribution. I think actually it's funny, on my podcast, I was talking to a colleague of mine and his concern for the younger folk, and I don't mean that as pejorative, but with the quantity of work from home, even in the sort of the flex offices, the hybrid offices, the concern we both sort of expressed for younger people is they don't get as much of that in-person time That really is what builds your network, right? I can call someone I worked with 25 years ago, day in, day out at the cube next to mine or whatever. And first we'll share a laugh and talk about our lives and whatever, but then go straight into where our jobs have taken us and open new doors. So I think if anyone is on the sort of younger side of the spectrum of your listeners listening, build your network as like, but really build it, right? Don't just go connect to 5,000 random people on LinkedIn. That's not building a network. That's just getting plus ones or something, right? Like spend that time, get to know people, because this is a small world. Like worlds overlap so easily, it always shocks me.
100% agreed on so many fronts of what you just said. And my sense too is it's somewhat exacerbated by artificial intelligence. I mean, reoccurring everyone, almost everyone on the team commented earlier this week. So we're recording this here in the first half of January. Everyone on the team commented how much project work they got done over the holidays leveraging AI. And I think at this point, everyone recognizes that, what you would historically hire a consultant to do is in your back pocket. And if that remains the case, and all indications are that it will be, then what becomes a premium? And I think a large part of it is relationships. It's the human element of, yes, generating value, but, who do you know and what value can you bring to them beyond information?
I completely agree, and not only that, there's another sort of layer to it, which is AI is letting us all do. I like to say, let's us all be average at stuff is sort of the way I think about it, right? Like if I want to write a press release, AI can write me a press release. It will be a fine press release. It's not going to, I don't know if press releases win awards, but it certainly wouldn't. So I can become, there's all this talk about like the first billionaire solopreneur and things like that. I see it not only as a lonely path and viable for people. I'm not, everybody, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, as my old co-founder used to say. But the flip concern is by not engaging with your marketing team, because now you can do it yourself, quote, air quotes around that, right? You lose that opportunity to build that network. And by getting sort of a lot of average work out of ChatGPT, I think it also contributes to us thinking we know a lot of things that we might not know. Whereas, fine, get the draft from ChatGPT, but then sit down with your marketing team and be like, hey, is this a good press release? What do we do with this? I want to, how do we tweak this so that you're building skills, building those bonds, and you have those people to call years from now, right? ChatGPT is not going to be there for it. Well, it probably will, but it won't be there for you in that way 5 years from now, when it helped you out with that one need you had. It doesn't care, right? Whereas you and I collaborating on something, we're both going to learn, we're both going to grow, hopefully have a fun time doing it, and might call each other back 10 years from now, like, hey, remember we worked on that thing? I got another one, or whatever it might be.
I agree. So with that, let's talk about culture. You said, was it eight preceding or eight total in companies that you've started?
This was my eighth
Okay. And
company.
how have you thought about just building the culture within the companies? Is it intentional or did it just, organically manifest itself just based on who and your co-founder, conduct themselves?
Well, I think probably I'll do it like 70-30. I think the who you are as a founding team is going to be the foundation for the culture of any startup, right? So my co-founder and I are both pretty casual. We're similarly, he's actually much younger than me, but we both have maybe the same love of certain aspects of things like pop culture. So, we're not going to have a Zoom call where one of us isn't going to be making a joke about like an 80s movie reference or something like that, right? So like, and we even would tell people in the interviews is like, if you don't enjoy the way we're talking right now, you will not enjoy working here, because this is how we talk all the time, right? And another attribute of JT and myself, we're both very transparent, very direct people. So we can set that culture moving forward. And part of it then weeds out in interviews, and part of it as people on board. And then part of it becomes that deliberate, what is the kind of place we want to make? And we're both dads. So we would tell people also in interviews is like, we're not a, what they call the 9-9-6-6, have you heard this term? People work 9 or 9-9-6. You work nine at, yeah, from 9 to 9, 6 days a week. We're very quick to be like, we're not that. We are the kind of place where we expect you to get your stuff done, right? We're both believers in, how you do anything is how you do everything kind of thing. So we care a lot about the quality of work being done. And we would make sure it was very, very clear as people would onboard. It's like, I don't care if you're at work at 4 p.m. on a Thursday or having drinks with your oldest friend in the world. I care that the thing you said you'd have done at 3:30 p.m. on the Thursday came in before you left, right? And so we would really be focused on a culture where transparency and directness were highly valued, where asking questions was truly appreciated. A lot of places say, oh no, ask all the questions. But we also have the younger generation of workforce, like, not as comfortable with that, right? Not really not. And so if you don't make it abundantly clear, hey, if you don't know what we're talking about, just ask, they won't. And I don't mean that again, that's not meant as a pejorative, it's just the cultural observation we had. So we had to be very pushy about that. Like, wait, did you do this without knowing what we asked for? Why'd you make that assumption? That we would actually be more annoyed with people, even if they got the job done, even if they did a great job, but if they didn't ask questions. And that was part of our way of reinforcing that culture.
I'm curious, do you think that behavior is more generational or just by virtue of maturity associated with the age?
I think it's generational. My personal, this is now just me, and I'm not an expert on these things, but my thesis is the generation that got raised with Google at their fingertips, much like the ones with AI at their fingertips, why would you ask a human a question when you could Google that, right? Why would I ask you, hey, Christian, can you explain, founder, how to build culture at a startup when I can Google how to build start culture at a startup and then read an article by, I don't know, Brian Chesky or somebody else who's really done it. And I think, so again, that's why it's not a pejorative. I think they got so used to being independent and then coming into a workforce, especially, if you think about people in their late 20s into their 30s, right? There was a lot of that kind of hustle culture going on where, yeah, you go find out the information, go get it done, right?
The entire team's remote, or do
The
you have an?
entire team is remote. Yeah.
And then, did you intentionally or make a point of getting everyone together throughout the year?
We did. We joked we had on sites instead of off sites. We'd have on sites. We would fly. So I had people in India, Europe, California, Atlanta, South Carolina. I'm here in New York. Someone in Denver. Someone in Chicago. I'm sure there's a couple other spots. I picked Atlanta actually as my as our hub because it's everyone. There's always a direct flight to Atlanta, and it doesn't have the same overhead as New York does. So what we did about once a quarter is we find a large Airbnb, like a 10-bedroom house or whatever, and we'd hole up there for 4 or 5 days. We would do some productivity sessions, some culture building sessions, some volunteering. I always would have a volunteering session in the midst of what we do. We would cook all our meals. I mean, we'd go out once or twice, but we would do a thing about cooking together as a team. And we'd always do a sort of a variation on a hackathon. I always called it a scrimmage, with the subtle difference between the hackathon, where the goal is just to sort of prototype. The goal was to actually ship. So we would pick some very small thing. It could have been just a feature within Augie, but a couple of times it was standalone products, and build and ship them inside of 48 hours.
Super impressive. What was one of the questions I was going to ask earlier is, was your dev team in-house or outsourced? It sounds like it's in-house.
It was in-house. We had some contractors come and go over the time. We brought in some specialists when we needed, someone who could build a certain thing a certain way. Again, the time has changed so much. Like when we started Augie, there were no L, I mean, there were, but LLMs were not commonly used or available for most developers. So one of the people on the team was an actual expert at AI video transformations. Amazingly, over the course of the 4 years, that skill became sort of commoditized, right? And then, and not to disparage him or anything, it's just more of
Sure.
the things you could do blew up while we, from like we started this company in a whole different world than the one we live in today, in so many ways.
Yeah. I see the same thing. I'm curious. So to come full circle, you have these on-sites. I presume some of the members of the team who were there were younger generation. Did you notice any differences once they had an opportunity to get out of the house and be face to face with the team? Back to your earlier comment about asking questions.
They loved it. I think, the only thing I would do different from that perspective is I would have loved to have created a, maybe only have like two cities that we recruited in. Like, like JT and I've talked about this. Like, if we had hired everybody be where he lives in Charleston or where I live in New York, then we could have been doing a lot more. We didn't have to have formal get together. We could have just people meet up at a Starbucks or a WeWork or whatever, and have like even just one day a week, we all huddle up and work on our various things. We actually have one developer who's in Brooklyn. Every now and then he would come up here. I live in Westchester. He'd come up to my apartment and just code from here for the day. Obviously we'd hang out a bit, but it was just sort of nice to be together at some parts of time.
100%. Yeah, we're remote as well. I recently got an invite to a corporate VC's campus, and it was it been a long time since I'd been back in a space. And to your point, it was absolutely for that hour I was there, it was brilliant. I just totally realized how much I miss, sharing a co-working space or working space with somebody.
I actually had a co-working office for a little while during Augie, right in the middle for about an 8 month stretch. I had rented out a place, but it wasn't really doing what I that there weren't enough people in the like I it just didn't quite work out for me. I will say, like, JWX is a do whatever you want kind of environment. I've been going into the office and I'm loving it. It's even though like none of my direct team's there, just being like being with people from totally disparate parts of the organization, it is very nice to have the opportunity to just be like, hey, person, how are you today? It's not me here in my little living room or whatever.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, it's iron. I mean, it's so ironic. I think everyone was so grateful to ditch the commutes, and then you realize, man, we need to invent a transporter just
Yeah.
so back to the office without the time waste of sitting in a car. I admit, because you made the statement, bit off the cuff, but also because I grew up in the 80s, top three movies. You made reference to quotes. I got to ask.
For quoting purposes or just
Or just
movies?
best three movies out of the 80s that you find yourself
Oh my God, this is a
attributing
problem.
to.
Any of my friends listening to this are going to be like, oh, whatever three I pick right now are going to be the wrong three. I'm going to put Fletch on this list only because it is my literal go-to movie. If it
Okay.
any, it is the get me into the right mood. It makes me nostalgic for any moment in my life. It's always been a movie I love, and it is all ball bearings these days anyway. So Fletch will be up there. Gosh, just 80s in general. There's part of me that wants to put Die Hard, which is from 89, on the list because it really did redefine the action movie genre, right? I kind of feel I almost have to put Empire on the
Oh,
list.
interesting.
I mean, I my brain's going through like, well, what about Trading Places? What about Ferris Bueller's Day Off or
Yeah.
Breakfast Club or Fish Called Wanda? But I think I'm or and what about Indy? I don't know. You're killing me with three. I
I
don't.
know. It was intentional. It's interesting to see where you have to gravitate towards. Being a Star Wars fan myself, I'm curious, why would you go with Empire over Jedi?
I might be an unpopular opinion here, but I think Jedi is not a great movie. I think Jedi has many of the best moments. I wouldn't mind seeing a Jedi cut without the Ewoks. And I'm not anti cute, fun, silly, But if you really watch it again, they really serve no purpose in the story at all. Like they're just not needed. And it,
Well,
you know, but the first hour of Jedi, like leading up to the escape off the barge, et cetera, is might be the strongest single hour of Star Wars. I don't know. Again, that, like, should we just go like, well, let's just start doing like the tear apart Star Wars podcast here.
it would be so much fun to participate in, only because it had such an impact just on me loving the series as a
I will
whole.
say, as far as I'm concerned, I will refer to them by episode number, but episode four is called Star Wars.
Yes.
Period. There's no the other thing. I don't go
Nope.
for.
I think
Nope. Nope. Nope.
Well, it's funny too. I was thank you for humoring me. Empire's my go-to as well, then Revenge of the Sith, but only because it was
Ooh.
kind of strange as a kid watching a movie that didn't have a happy ending, and it really stuck
Sure.
with me. And
Did you see it in the I saw it in the theaters.
same.
I remember walking out freaked out.
Yeah, I was like, what just happened to Han? This is like no bueno.
Yeah. Did you watch, by the way, did you watch Andor?
I watched season one, and I forget the actor's name, but I thought it was well done. I enjoyed it.
I'll leave you with this. I strongly recommend season two.
Okay.
And if you're into it, when you however you watch or binge or whatever, and listeners who have not watched Andor, try this. When you get near the end, set aside a time block to do the following. You're
Okay.
going to watch episodes either 8, 9, and 10 or 9 and 10, your choice, back to back, and then go straight into Rogue One, and then go straight into the opening crawl of Star Wars. It is mind-blowing
Okay.
how different the journey of Star Wars becomes when you do that.
I've not watched season two. I am now going to do it. Thank you for the suggestion.
All right.
All right. That was a
All
fun.
the entrepreneurs out there are very excited for this part of the
That's funny. Okay. Well, it was a fun detour. We'll come back. I'd love for you to give your outlook now, if you could, on artificial intelligence. I also find myself participating in conversations of, how does it change the world we work in? And I'd love to get your perspective.
Sure. I mean, it's obviously a huge question. I think I'll sort of readdress what I said earlier. What my opinion of what AI does for all of us is it brings us up to basically from incompetent to competent at anything it can do. So if you can't Photoshop, you can now Photoshop. You can't do it as well as an actual designer, but now you can. If you couldn't figure out how to write a press release, if you don't know how to write a business plan or go to market strategy or whatever the thing you're trying to get done, it'll do it. And it'll do an average job because the bulk of LLMs are built on the massive content, and the massive content is average, right? And again, none of this is meant to insult anybody or anyone, but it's more of you're not, I heard someone talk about like AI generated screenplays, and while they'll be amazing, I'm like, let's really think about how many amazing, since you brought up movies, how many amazing screenplays are there really out there to learn from? Not very many. There's not a lot of amazing screenplays. There's lots of screenplays. But if we want to have AI give us amazing caliber stuff, it needs to be trained on amazing caliber stuff. So, and that will change over time because we'll start that reinforcement learning around better and better quality content. Here's the question, though, for me is if everything's sort of now average, how much of it do we just sort of stop doing? Right? Like, I often joke if I were to send you an email that was like a where the email said, craft an email to Christian explaining why I want to be on his podcast as a 30-year media tech industry veteran. Like, could that email actually have been enough? Do I need to actually do the prompt? You know what I mean? Like, I mean it facetiously, but if all we're doing right now is writing a prompt and then sending the output of that prompt to some other person for them to then interpret it with another prompt and then take it to the next prompt, we're really the most, it is like the most a direct version of why we're just pushing pencils around at the nth degree. So this becomes like the big, I think this is the big question on all our minds is what do we end up doing next? Right? If I don't need to learn half the things I might need to learn, and half of the work people are doing is really just pencil pushing in one way or another. Well, it either points to us needing to figure out like, okay, people are going to have a lot more free time, right? And historically, every time technology is like, now your time is free, it really is just more time you spend managing the technology that made your time free. So the optimistic side of me is this is the thing that lets us start relaxing a little bit from this crazy treadmill-ish kind of existence, and maybe we all start to think a little bit more about maybe, you know, we make it a little easier for people to live, thrive, and survive. The pessimistic version of me is this is the biggest cost-cutting opportunity for publicly traded CEOs whose job is on the line to cost cuts at all time. And I mean that a little cynically, but that's kind of, there's a lot of truth in it. Obviously, CEOs are more rewarded for innovating and growing, but they are pretty well incentivized to shrink and cut. And so I hope we don't go on the path like that because then we start running into this weird version of an economy where there just aren't the kind of jobs to support the economy we actually all want. So that might have been a big nothing burger of an answer, but that is sort of the how I frame it in my own head.
Well, you triggered a thought with so I appreciate you sharing. You triggered a thought with the comment around, asking, writing a prompt to write an email, and it being a representation of the underlying data. Let's call it mediocre. It was interesting. I've been watching the Beatles anthology, multi-part series, talking of an evolution of the band. I'm personally a big fan, but I'd also tell you my most favorite Beatles songs are at the end of their career. And I can only take from what I get from the show, but yes, it's a combination of immense talent, but it was also just time and grade and iteration. And I think there's overtures to everything we do. I mean, whether it's writing an email, writing a screenplay, yes, you may have tools at your disposal that can make it easier, but the more you do it, whatever we apply ourselves, I think is gonna you'll you it'll be evident in the outcomes.
Totally agree. I think, you know, it's funny. I'm a supporter, and I don't mean this politically, but the concept of universal basic income, which actually goes very nicely with an AI-driven world, where it's like, you know, my vision is something simple as basically like, if you live, we shouldn't make it so hard for you to like have food, clothes, shelter, and let's call it a cell phone, right? And that said, if you want to be traveling the world and experiencing all sorts of crazy things, well, you're going to have to do more than just sort of, you're going to have to contribute something, right? And that's sort of the basics of capitalism anyway. It's just a version where maybe we protect our lowest tier instead of just throwing them out to wherever they may end up. I believe immensely that folks like yourself and myself, where it's like, no, I don't want to sit around and eat bonbons all day. I want to go and do and create and meet and learn and get better at something and improve a skill and et cetera. I believe that is a world where we should be able to thrive in that world. And you get ahead by that desire and sort of going back to what you said earlier, like there is grinding it out, right? You can't mediocrely prompt your way to improvement. Right. You can only improve by taking that mediocre prompt, taking the mediocre output, doing your own editing, and then getting some other person to come back and smack you over the head and tell you, nope, that wasn't a very good job. And here's why, so you can learn from it and rinse and repeat. So I am very bullishly optimistic on what this lets people who want to learn and grow do. I'll use a non-work example. I have turned ChatGPT for me has become my, so I'm 52 and I decided like 4 months ago that I wasn't in good shape. And I've been using exclusively as a platform. I use the internet as well. I, for lack of a better phrase, do the research, but I use ChatGPT for my own sort of my fitness pal, exercise planning, weight loss, sleep met all the stuff around improving my health is all contained in the ChatGPT project. But it's only the combination of taking the what it's giving me doing the work, and then cross-checking stuff with, reliable places on the internet, whether it's personal trainers or watching YouTube videos or whatever, but getting all of that data together, that has sort of let me do something I would never have thought to do before, right? I've tried the apps, I've tried going to the gym, I could never get motivated. But something about the combo of letting me build my own system allowed me to actually do it, right? Which has been like, my head spins on that one a lot right now, right?
It's interesting. Earlier, you used the word create, which, in my experience, is one of the truest forms of self-expression. And I think I just heard you describe it again. Even if it's a system that you incorporate, but I think we're probably going to see more of it. And personally, I would encourage it for anyone who's listening to this is create, create, create. Because in a world where, AI can, I don't know, competing with AI is the right word, but where AI is also creating, I think it's going to be most exciting when you see creation that incorporates the human experience and everything that we are.
I love how you phrase that, actually. I think the like it, you're right, it's the human experience. My 18-year-old daughter is she's a student at RISD, and she's been making her own video games. She taught herself how to code, and she refuses to use any form of Cursor or Gemini, not because she doesn't think she knows they would speed her up, but A, she like in the game, she makes like 8-bit kind of games, like old school, almost like Nintendo kind. And for her, she wants the games to really be a reflection of who she is, right? So she had made this one game. It's like oh my God, she's gonna hate me. A snowy day. You walk around and you have to collect 10 snowflakes on your tongue, and that's it. You just walk around and the whole gameplay will take about 4 minutes, and you're not going to get stabbed in the eye by a giant or something. But what's special for her is that it's all hers, and she's then grown from that. So she writes her own blog, and she does her own this. She's making her own music for the game, which she's learning how to do. She started creating her own poetry around it, and she's built her own like personal website, like a Wix kind of page by hand. She did it all literal handcrafted HTML.
Love it.
And I like to share that because I think it is such the antithesis of what we think 18-year-olds are doing today.
Hey, Beatles started in the cavern. So good on her. That's brilliant. Jeremy, unfortunately, we're coming up on time. Before we wrap up, I'd love to give you an opportunity to give a shout out to anyone in your personal professional network who's had a material impact on you over the years.
Well, this might be a weird way to go because technically he's the reason you and I met, but prior guest on your show actually is Jonathan Lowenhar from Enjoy the Work. We brought him in, or I brought him in as basically to be like my mentor throughout the process of running Augie, and was so transformative for me. And Jonathan, if you're listening, like mwah, big giant hug and a kiss out there, but help me both with, I'm going to use this first before all of the businessy stuff. Help me by bringing so much compassion to my world, which you don't hear a lot of in the startup. You don't hear, that's not a word that comes up a lot. And Jonathan was always able to help me do more than what I could by leading through compassion and curiosity, and plus he's just a brilliant guy. So Jonathan is the mensch I would point at for today.
Fantastic. Yes. Well, shout out to Jonathan, and I am grateful that he introduced us, Jeremy. We'll, as Jeremy mentioned, we've been fortunate to have him on the podcast as well. We'll include a link to that episode in the show notes. But yes, super impressive, and really got to enjoy knowing the rest of the team that enjoy the work. So would encourage you to check them out. Exciting new chapter for you. If there's anyone, though, in our audience who would like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
I have a unique name. Look me up on LinkedIn. You will 100% of the time find me.
Fantastic. And with that, again, for the benefit of our audience, Jeremy Thoman, founder of Augie, and now the Senior Vice President of AI Innovation at JWX. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.